In the beginning, there was nothing. Then there were comic books. Once you enter our world, there is no escape. Comic exposure begins in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Comic Exposure Podcast. My name is Josh, and with me, as always, is my unstoppable killing machine, Cowboy of Death, the one, the only.
You asked the question, do I have a Zippo lighter that says F communism? You bet I do. Travis Ratz here.
All right, folks, you're listening to the Comic Exposure Podcast, where Travis and I dive deep into trades and graphic novels and sometimes do nerd stuff, but this is a comic book club episode, and it's the summer, Travis. Well, close enough to summer.
What's that sound? It's like a sizzling. It's like a sizzling sound. Something. Are you cooking something, or is it? It's like
I am. This is the summer reheat, baby.
What?
What? So every summer, Travis and I try to figure out what's the thing we're going to do this summer. Something to spice up our reading. Something to do something different. And this time, after doing this podcast for so long, so very long, Travis and I have decided that we were going to go and read volume twos, or the second parts of books that we had already read. So on this episode, we are hearkening back to our very second episode.
Tonight, on a very second episode.
where Travis had me read his childhood, his young adolescent favorite comic book, Preacher Volume 1.
I feel like you're front loading your opinion on the second volume here.
No. So 10 years ago, Travis had us read Volume 1. The first, this is like, Preacher's gone through 30 different versions of doing this. The one that we read for the show, I believe, was the first 12 issues. Issues 1 through 12.
Yeah.
And so for this episode, we read issues 13 through 25.
I think we read the same thing. I just pulled out the second and third.
That is the one I read.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's like 12 issues. Another 12 issues is what we're at. And Travis, let's talk.
Well, maybe it was your reverse. Maybe I come to you. Maybe I come to you this time. All right.
Yeah.
Wait, hold on. Ding. I think it's ready. Ooh, it's warm. It's warm here.
Watch the pan.
So we talked about how we're not rereading the previous volumes. If we need to, or if we want to, we can listen to the episode if we need like a recap. And hopefully our past selves did, you know, like the first couple years, I think we did a good job of like walking through the story. But after I think it was just kind of talking vaguely about the story itself. So going into this, Josh, did you remember anything about the first volume of Preacher? What did you remember? What stuck in your, what was still a little bit warm before you reheated it?
Well, luckily, I didn't watch all of the TV show that they did a handful of years ago, but I did like watch the first handful of episodes of the FX show. Right.
Yeah.
So I had that kind of floating in my brain a little bit. And then there are some major points that are hard to forget from that first volume of Preacher.
He's got the word of God. He's after God.
He's got the word of God.
He's got a girlfriend.
There's a cowboy who kills everybody. There's a vampire. There's a guy with a butthole for a mouth. There's all of that going on. And so I remembered those pieces. The thing I didn't remember is that I forgot what he was on a journey for.
Okay.
That he was going after God. That part I didn't remember until a couple issues into this reread. I'm like, I don't remember what he's looking for.
You know what, Josh? I can put it down in one word. You know what he's looking for? A reckoning.
A reckoning is coming. That was the one thing. I'm like, I know he's on a journey for something. What's he looking for? And I couldn't
what is remember every, what it what was. What is every preacher looking for, Josh?
Yeah, he's looking for God. You're correct. We're recording this on Sunday. Yesterday I was at a funeral in a Catholic church, and it was very like, I was like, oh yeah. So like having read Preacher, not that Preacher is a very holy or religious text, but the subtext of God and angels, and then sitting in a Catholic church, which is very, you know, up and down, put the kneelers out, kneel, everybody's reciting the same things. I still remembered all the bits and pieces from when I was a kid. This was a very like religious centric week as I read this book dabbles in religion.
That's kind of cool.
So it was a very, it was a very interesting sort of way to go about this read. I will freely talk about how we read this probably, it is probably 10 years ago, if I remember correctly.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
When we read this, when I read volume one, and I remember understanding why it's important.
Yes.
In comics culture, getting why it means so much to you and the version of like when you read it.
Yeah.
As a young man, I know that when I read it that first time, I was like, man, it is leaning into some just like things that I'm like, right?
Yeah.
But reading it this time, reading the second volume 10 years later, after kind of critically digesting a lot of comic books.
Yeah.
Right. When we think about how many books we've read and really tried to look at them as a critical lens. And when we first were doing the show, I don't think that was not our sort of purpose or my thought process when I read. So reading it now, reading volume two, 10 years later, I think I'm looking at it differently. Right. I think I'm putting it in a different lens. And I will also tell you, Travis, as soon as I finished it, it popped up on my Kindle. Read volume three for free. And I said, download.
Yeah, I always do that too, because you're like, is it always going to be free? So if you want to read it in the future.
I haven't started volume three, but I only finished this yesterday morning. Right?
Gotcha.
So I finished the last issue yesterday morning, because 12 issues is a lot to read in a week. and then I hit it. I was like, okay, I kind of want to know what's next. Ooh. I didn't feel that way necessarily after reading volume one with you. And then we were on this thing of like, let's read this and let's read this and let's read this. But now I'm like, okay, I think I can read this in the background of what I'm reading and work my way through it.
Well, so you mentioned something about kind of approaching it from more of a critical lens than like, hey, do we like this? Do we not like this? So like exposing you to something, right? And that is kind of in this reread, because it's been a while. I bought those big Preacher, beautiful hardcover, leather bound. It has like all 75 issues in it. And I feel like I've reread number one a lot. Because when you sit down, you're like, oh, I want to get Preacher. You start at the beginning thinking you're going to go through it. And then you get through like the first 12, right? So I hadn't read this section in a while. And I'm noticing this. And I don't know if it stinks or whatever it is. But coming from a critical lens, each time I come back to Preacher, there is diminishing returns. I'm looking for, so this time, like, of course, now as an adult reading this, and I'm curious if we start at the same spot because we're reading kind of the same thing, but like in different volumes here. I don't know if we like what storyline you started on and which one
was this it.
Like,
starts the right after Grandma. This starts right after.
Okay,
Grandma,
so they're in New York with the sex detectives and stuff like that.
Yes.
Okay, and then you got into the France stuff, the Marsad, right?
Like, yes. Wait,
okay. Yeah,
yeah.
Okay. Like the All Father and stuff like that. Okay. Good. We read the same
thing. This is the very first page of the volume.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so we started the same thing. So
yeah,
the section that we read right after that is probably the most hypersexual and violent section in all of Preacher.
Yes.
And I was like, oh my God, of course this is what's next. How could I forget this? And this is what Josh was most critical about in the comic the first time he read it. And he's getting like it Preacher, but like to the tens Preacher. And reading it, like I started reading, I'm like, uh-oh, there's a lot of like just how vulgar combinations of words and acts can I combine in different synaptical ways to get an effect. And I was like, okay, all right. I don't know about the city boy. I don't know if my 2024 self should even be reading this anymore, you know? But then I started to think about what Garth Ennis has said about the origins of Preacher and stuff like that. Maybe we talked about this in the first podcast.
I don't remember if we did.
But he you know, Ennis and Dylan, they worked together on Hellblazer. They had that great run on Hellblazer. And so basically, like, Vertigo was like, hey, you got carte blanche. Whatever you guys want to do next for a creator-owned, get a creator-owned one. And Ennis, even though he's Irish, had grown up watching American films. And he says he approaches writing comics not by looking at how other comic stories, but looking at films and really trying to take that film experience to put in the comics. And he was, in particular, this was really a combination of, like, kind of three tones and ideas. Wild at Heart, like that 1980s with Nicolas Cage, I want to say, in there. Anyway, it's like a love story romance, like two people are so in love they'll do anything for each other. Unforgiven. And what is the Catherine Bigelow movie with vampires, Before Dark or Before Night? It was like, anyways, it's like a really, like, kind of biker vampire movie.
Okay.
Yeah. It was a combination of all three of those things. And he's talked about, he does not like violence. He doesn't like watching violence. He doesn't like hearing news about real violence. And I started to put those thoughts together while reading it, in the sense that, okay, this is obviously, this is like someone writing about violence who's maybe never been in a fight, never seen it live on there, and only getting it from film. And he's of the age where he was watching cinema in the 1970s and 80s, where everything was hyper-violent and everything was hyper-sex. And he was fascinated with American culture. He loves American culture, even though he hasn't spent a lot of time there. So it was like, hey, write your Western action romance based on 70s and 80s movies, and then just turn up the volume. And that's what this is. It's like
a foreigner's
view of America through pop culture in the 70s and 80s.
And so that's what I'm saying, like, critically, like, reading it now, of course, that first few things where they're at the guy's party, right? I don't remember his name, but they're at
it's supposed to be like a play off of that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, we're at his sort of, like, Sodom and Gomorrah party, where it's like just endless.
Every panel is just like a sick, twisted sex scene.
Right. And I will just freely admit this. I find there's something different between, look, I've watched lots of ridiculous films. I've watched Game of Thrones, all of these TV shows, all of these things, but there's just, I can't figure out what the disconnect is for, like, having watched things like that. And then, and movies where people are vulgar, you think of, like, you know, any movie by Scorsese where it's the F word every other line, right?
Yeah.
But there's something different. I don't know what it is about reading it. Yeah. I can't figure out what the disconnect is between watching it and reading it, where reading it just feels different. And I can't put my finger on why that is.
Texture. I think it's the texture of the story. Like, it's when it's, like, all around you and you're listening to it on your TV and the speakers and people are you shouting the F word every two lines in your ear, and you have to hear the sound of, like, someone's head getting caved in. It just provides all the sensory texture that your brain has to create while reading. It's not someone being like, this is what a skull sounds like when it shatters. You can detune it. It could be super hyperviolent, and your brain can automatically detune it to a level that is palpable to you.
And I think maybe it's more, and this is the weirdest part, is, like, sometimes when you see it on screen, it's more comedic, right? Like, there's the, like, what did we just watch? We just watched something that was hyper violent. We just watched The Boys, the same sort of Amazon show. The we were watching Fallout, right? So we were watching the new Fallout show. Fantastic. Gabby and I watched it. Gabby really liked it. But there is, like, giant, dumb violence in it.
Yeah.
Right? Nothing like overly sexual, but just, like, stupid, gory violence. And that, I'm like, oh, okay, like, I'm fine with. Like, so it was just weird. And I will say, like I said, reading this now, I go, like, okay, I want to put myself in the idea of, like, this is pushing the envelope of comics. right? This is happening, and we're pushing the envelope of comics, and we had already pushed the envelope in film before this.
Yeah.
Right? So this is like, let's tread new ground. Let's be more out there than we can be just to push the medium farther. And people probably won't go this far because they don't have to anymore.
Yeah.
Because they know it's already been done. So they can do it less hyper-violent, less hyper-sexual, because it's already been done. Right? For me, it's this sort of like, this, let's test the waters of comics to see how vulgar and how out there we can go. And reading it now, as a 42-year-old man, as opposed to a 32-year-old man, which doesn't make any sense, because at 32, I would have been closer to my age where I would have been like, but I don't know if, like, just at 32, I'm like, oh, come on, right? I have young kids. Why am I reading this? But now I'm like, okay, it is what it is. It's silly. It's goofy. It's over the top. But it does feel very much like Ennis is going, what can I do that no one's done yet? What's the thing I can write?
Taboo.
What's the scene? What's the scene I can put to page that's more taboo than anybody's done?
Yeah. No.
And I feel like he amps it up, and then there are two beats in this volume. There are two issues in this volume where it, like, flips far away from that.
Go
and
ahead.
It's the two flashback ones. Mm-hmm. The one with his dad,
love that.
Which is a little, it's not nearly as vulgar as any other. I mean, it still plays with the genre.
Yeah, it's a nom. And I'm like, yeah, which is part of that, like, language and violence and stuff like that.
It's. I mean, and Garth Ennis loves a war story, right? So he gets to tell a war story for an issue. And then he tells the story of Cassidy coming to New York. Mm-hmm. And that ends this volume. And there's something I go, like, that's the piece. That's the conversation and the thought and the love letter to America that I'm like, okay, I want to read more of it, because it feels that at issue 24 or 25, which is just weird to say.
Yeah.
But at 25, he's like, okay, this is the story I'm telling.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm going to lean into this love letter with some graphic parts of it, but it feels like it tapers off.
Yes.
In this volume.
Yes.
Like he starts to slow down with what he's writing.
Yes. I feel like the sex party is like the, like, hey, you know, like, do I have everyone on board? Like, anyone, you know, because this, what you're saying keeps this book in the 90s from being sealed in a black wrapper and put up top by the pornos. You know, like, you think of heavy metal from, like, the 1970s and 80s and stuff like that, because there is heart to the story. And I think you have to have, I mean, that's what, to me, that Preacher is a love story. Like, it's a Western, but it's a love story.
I mean, you've got that love story between him and Tulip, which you can feel it. It's very Natural Born Killers.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Mickey and Allie.
Like, it feels like, you know, it feels very much in that milieu where Natural Born Killers is that hyper-violent, hyper-sexual story.
Yeah, there's that, you know, simple kind of cheesy line where they always recite to each other, and it's the title of one of my volumes here, Till the End of the World, right?
Yeah.
Like, and all this stuff. And that road trip aspect of, like, you know, stealing cars and stuff like that. And he's torn because, like, he wants to protect her, and he has this monologue about, like, I'm sorry, it's just how guys are. Like, I know that I know everything out there says, hey, you know, women are this and this. And I go, I get it. But I can't. I don't know where it comes from. But, like, I can't have you be in danger. And so he constantly leaves her and constantly, you know, there's that sense of, like, tension on there. These two people are meant to be together. And the thing that's separating them isn't that. It's his, you know, old school thinking that creates the problems for this.
Or, like, he loves her so much, he doesn't want to see her get hurt.
Yes.
Right? He even says, he's like, I know you can do it. I know that you can take care of yourself. I know you can do those things. I just can't live with the idea that you're going to get hurt because of the things I'm doing.
Or the things that I'm capable of doing to keep you from being harmed. If you were, like, caught, like, I would do this and I would do this. There's nothing that I wouldn't do to keep you from harm. And if people use that against me, I got the word of God. You know,
right. And so I, at reading this now, reading the second volume of it, I go, okay, I think it, and it's weird to say, I think it took me 25 issues to go like, oh, this is what he's doing. Right. I see what he's doing. I'm looking at it as a more critical lens. I can see it there. I can see why when I read it 10 years ago, I was like, okay, I didn't like it. But reading it now, I'm like, okay, now I feel like what's my journey the rest of this year is I'm going to chip away at this. And I'm going to chip away at each of these volumes, and I want to finish it.
Yeah.
I want to see where this goes. I don't want to go watch the TV show. No. I want to see where this goes. Yes. I want to see what the... Because there are some really poignant writing in here, mixed in with all of the dudes getting their penises blown off.
Yeah, yeah.
Just with in drugs and sex, within all of that, there is this sort of like lovely monologues every once in a while. Yeah. And it's a very interesting way to write. And look, Garth Ennis is a writer who has a point of view and a thing that he's doing. And this is very 90s, but it's also at the same time parts that feel very 90s. He also is like pushing the envelope of acceptance. And like, it's weird. It's this weird mix of like crass and problematic. Right. Yeah. And then there's times where you're like, okay, he's ahead of the curve on that. He's like, yeah, he writes this pretty troublesome thing, but then he's like, yeah, but who cares? Right.
Yeah.
Like,
I think one of the things aside from the sex and violence that is, I remember as a kid was most shocking to me, and I'm not even religious, is when we get to like the savior, like, so there's this organization called the Grail and they're in charge of protecting the bloodline of Jesus Christ.
Of Jesus. Yes. Right? Yeah.
And then they show you the descendant of it, which scientifically makes sense, on there, but you're like, oh my goodness. How are they getting away with this? Because it is so sacrilegious,
you know? Right? It is very like, okay, but at the same time, I like it is, and this is the strange thing, like how, I mean, I know this was a TV show and this was they turned this into a TV show at the time of like, let's adapt TV shows.
Seth Rogen and them were doing a lot of that stuff. Yeah.
And it doesn't make sense to do 75 comic books as a movie, but this is ripe for 2 hours of like, just how do we shrink it into the dumbest version possible and make the most wildly inappropriate film we can?
Yeah.
And I probably watch the hell out of it.
Yeah.
Which doesn't make sense to me, but like, yeah. Boil it down to this sort of ridiculous premise of what this is.
Well,
it's ridiculous.
And one of the things I like about A Preacher, and it sounds like kind of what you're getting into, and I do agree, it starts like around issue 20, 24. You start to do it. For me, Preacher at the time, and still today, just from a different age, it is a story that asks more questions than it gives answers to. Especially about theology, about relationships, about friendships, like him and Cass, and like what loyalty is, and you see that with what masculinity is, and the beautifulness of it and the dangers of it. And it's not telling you anything. It's just asking these questions. And Jesse Cusser, our Jesus Christ conduit to this with a chip on his shoulder, asks those questions in dialogue quite a bit, where you have, like you said, you have these monologues where it's not like, there are some like, hey, this is a reckoning. I'm giving you like my bottom line. He has his code and he gives you this code, but he also asks a lot of questions.
Right.
And he will give you, and if you read the whole thing, people who read all of Preacher, I think are in for a real treat, because the character will say things at the beginning, question them in the middle, and then change them, some of them at the end. And then some of them are just steadfast on there. So it's interesting to see which questions get answered by the character, which are left for the reader to decide, and which just can't be answered.
Yeah, and I think, you know, for me, it ends up being that thing where, like, there's something appealing about the idea of, I wrote this epic tale in comic books. It has a beginning, a middle, and an end. And it's not a 12-issue run, right? It's 75 issues or whatever it is. And I think about Why the Last Man. right? And I think about, you know, these books that I go that, you know, you can look at The Walking Dead the same way, Walking Dead being a little longer, but this idea of like there's a beginning, a middle, and an end, and you see the character's arc over this big period of time, things that you don't get in Superman or Batman or the Fantastic Four, because those characters ultimately can't change much. And those characters ultimately can't complete their quest or journey or whatever.
Yeah.
They'll complete the mini story, but they can't finish the whole thing, right? Even like my favorite runs in superheroes, you know, we're going to read part of Green Arrow and this reheat summer. Even that, Grell's Green Arrow has this kind of arc, but at the same time, he can't truly end it because someone else has to pick it up.
Right.
Right. The Morrison Animal Man run that I love has this weird arc. And I think other authors pick it up in this long run, and it kind of has an ending, but not really, because you can't really end it. And so there's something very appealing about this idea of writers who go, I'm going to give you this long form story in this medium where you're either telling short forms or a never ending story.
Right.
Right. I'm either giving you something that's 6-12 issues and it's done.
Or yeah, Otherworld. We slap Otherworld on it and call it a day.
Or yeah, or I'm gonna give you this story that, or we're just gonna play with this character and it's never gonna end.
Yeah, and Ennis, the character can't change. Ennis is really good about not coming back to his characters a lot. I think he might have went back to Hellblazer a little bit, but like he doesn't go back to the boys. He doesn't go back to like Preacher. And those, I mean, that's just payday waiting to happen. You could print money for like, you know, guys my age, you know, if they said we're gonna do like a 12
right?
yeah 12 issue mini arc on Arseface or something like that, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, this is printing money. I mean, with the Watchmen, I mean, Alan Moore, like, you like, we don't think of him as, you know, someone who, and they, of course, they deal without his permission and stuff like that, but the sense of going back and visiting,
people were pissed that they did those mini series without him, right?
But then like, we got that great HBO series because
But then I think that's another great example of like a work, and not as long, because again, Watchmen is that I'm going to tell that 12 issue story.
Yeah.
This is not that. This is so much bigger than that, and
it's
and
sweeping.
You get to develop.
Epic.
You get to develop characters more, and you get to bring people in and out and have them affect the story. And so for that, I've got to praise Ennis for this, right? And it makes me want to read it. I mean this, that as if there's one thing I want to have happen with Reheat Summer is, okay, I'm in. Let's figure it. I just want to finish it now.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like that's my goal now. Is this made me, this has made me go, okay, I downloaded volume 3, another 12 issues. Let's see if I can do it.
Yeah.
Right. So, and just chip away at it.
Sometimes Josh, you put something in the microwave. You're like, oh, this will be good. And then you start, you're like, this is worse when it's reheated.
This is like, but I left the pizza in the microwave for too long.
What about coming back to, because it's been a while since we've done, I mean, the late Steve Dillon. I remember this was something that you talked about, his art, and I believe your thing was like, oh, you know, because of the way he does people, obviously the thing is, you know, a lot of his characters will start to look the same, but it kind of helps mute the violence because of the way he draws, like someone's jaw being blown off or blood and stuff like that.
I mean, Steve Dillon is, I mean, there's this Vertigo feeling, right? Like this looks like a Vertigo book, and everybody else who's doing a Vertigo book apes Steve Dillon a little bit.
In Matt fact, Hollingsworth some, on colors.
Right. And there's this sort of like, I think of a lot of books in this time period that aren't House that have this sort of cartoony but realistic thing going on, right? And I think Dillon does a really great job. I think the art in here is fun, right? He does a really good job of like, there's some great character acting, like the way he draws people's reactions and faces, and then the hyper violence that we get to see. And this is the weird part, is I'm just swiping through pages, and I'm just like, okay, I haven't seen anything hyper violent, right? And then all of a sudden, 12 pages later, someone's head is getting blown off, right?
Right.
But there is a ton of dialogue in this. This is a dialogue heavy story. There's a lot of talking. Now, there's in some of this talking, there's a guy whose hand is covered in poop, but there's a lot of talking, right? Like, it's this weird thing where he's asked to draw conversations for a very long time, and then he has to do the switch of like, now I have to draw some big action.
Yeah.
And he does a really good job of doing both of those things as an artist, of giving you facial acting and not making the conversation pieces boring. And then when it's time to blow somebody's kneecap off, he does that well.
Yeah.
Right? I don't know how else to put it.
There's a great scene in this we read, like a character I really like, the eunuch. So it's this character that they hire to kind of torture Cassie the vampire. And he dialogues a lot while he's torturing. And he's got this old rifle, right? He's talking about the bolt action rifle and how like it makes guns an art form now. And you see him and he's monologuing for like two pages while he's blowing off Cassidy's kneecaps and shooting them and talking about the size of the bullet. And you're like, yeah, that's the stuff. As a kid, you're like, okay.
Right. And he does, but that's what I mean. Like, there is just tons and tons of dialogue and people talking, and then all of a sudden, this big piece, right? This big set piece. And I will also say that's the other thing that as writers and artists, they do a very good job of, is there are set pieces in this road trip, right? Like, let's do it in this big mansion house sex party, right? Let's do it in this mountainside fortress castle. Let's do it in this, you know, this place. And so you get those.
Because you need the destinations on the map, right? If it's a road trip,
right,
you need to, like, if we were going to do a fantasy map of it, you're like, oh, they were in New York here. Oh, then they were at the grandma's house in down south. And, oh, then now they're in France at the Marsada, you know, and things like that. So that's what someone needs to do, is draw, like, a map, like a poster map for Preacher.
Of where they go. Yeah.
I think what the art, I want to say before we move from the art is, I'm interested if you continue to read it and you read it all the way to the end, I want to come back off mic and at least talk about what you thought about the art. I think one of the critiques of this book is, as we get towards the end of it, as our deadlines are getting in there, people, like, you just see less detail from Steve Dillon. And I've never heard him talk about it, but I don't know if it's like a Mike Mignola thing where he's like, oh yeah, I just don't need as many lines. I've been doing this for a long time. I don't need as many lines for Hellboy. Or if it's literally like, I just can't be as detailed with things now as I could at the beginning.
Right. So my question for you, Travis, as we kind of wrap this up, is do you have single issues of Preacher?
Are I do.
You like...
I do.
Okay.
It's the one thing I pick up at Comic Cons. I only pick them up at Comic Cons. I keep an eye out for them. I created a little notepad on my my phone, so that way when I show up those things, I went, well, I have. Now, what am I going to do with them? I don't know. I have Preacher in like four different forms. But it just feels like... I feel like if the world shuts down, the internet shuts down, things like that, someone has to preserve this text. And I've taken it upon myself to collect it in all forms.
Have it in each form. But I understand that, because, like, seriously, like, I get that, because and you know what you could do, which would cheat the system, is you could just go on eBay.
Buy a lot.
And buy all of them. But that's not as fun, Travis.
Because you're like, there's a reason. God, yeah, I could never find issue 19 anywhere. You know,
right. There's a reason why sitting next to me right now is a stack of Grell Green Arrow in singles, a stack of Morrison's Animal Man in singles, and a stack of Justice League Europe in singles.
Yeah.
That is my hunt book. I'm not going to buy them on eBay. Those are the things that make going to a comic shop just a little more fun. Those are the things that make going to Comic-Con just a little more fun. A couple weeks ago, they had Old Man Con in Scottsdale. The Scottsdale comic collector thing. There's no anime, there's no plushies, there's no none of that stuff. It's just people in long boxes and like golden and bronze age comic books.
Yeah.
And I went just to see if I could find literally anything to fill those three notches.
Yeah.
And any weird magazine size ones that I find that I really like. I did. And that's what I did. I found Animal Man issue 1 that I did not have. I needed that first issue. I found one, and I found the Grell Green Arrow. I needed three, and I found it. I like, those are the things that I needed. I went and I dug and I found it. And I asked one guy, because I was like, ooh, I still need issue two for this. He's like, oh, I don't have it with me. But if you give me a call in the warehouse for blah, 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 I've probably got it. Did I call him? No. Because I don't want to get it that way. Yeah, I want to get it. I want to find it.
You want to find it.
Like,
oh,
yeah. That's, yes, that's what I need. But so one last piece. The covers, Glenn Fabry's covers covers are so amazingly good.
Yeah.
And the best part about getting them in the digital version, or if you have them in the graphic novel version, is none of the dressing is on it. Right. It's just pure cover.
Yep.
Not with Preacher written on it, or the Vertigo logo, or the barcode, or whatever.
But I will say that Preacher font is pretty cool.
It is. No, it is. But there's just something nice. There's just something special about seeing that untouched cover with nothing extra on it, and just being able to kind of check it out and see it. And look, there is, I don't know that I'll ever love Preacher.
Yeah.
But like, as a reread, I was like, okay, I can get it.
Yeah.
And it took me getting past the ultra sex party for me to go like, okay, I see what he's doing. I've got it. If this were in a movie, it wouldn't have taken me a day of like, it wouldn't have taken me this long to read this scene. That might be the other part of it too. In a movie, it would have been like 15, 10 minutes, if, right, of that scene. Where like, in this, you're sitting with it longer and you're like, okay, I get it. I know what you're doing. Okay. Yep. Oh, nope. There's one more scene. Oh, okay. You went a little vulgar than I thought you would. All right. Okay. And, you know, but I think like reheating it, if you will, has given me a larger appreciation for sort of like the envelope pushing nature of this piece of work.
Nice. Good first read then. Because like I said, when we got into what the next storyline was, I was reading it. I was like, please, like one more issue. And then end. I'm like, oh, it's like two more issues. Oh, God, three more issues of this. And I was like, this, if I remember correctly, this is exactly what Josh thought Preacher was going to be at the beginning. And the thing he was like, I could take this. But then we started to get away from that, moving into the Mossad storyline. And we had more of those deeper philosophical conversations.
That's right. That gets more interesting. We when we start talking about religion and how religion is used and this secret organization that's, you know, like protecting that, that's all very interesting to me. That was far more interesting than the sort of like rampant sex party that they end up at.
Yeah, right? I think we needed all that because the Cassidy and Jesse Custer friendship does play a huge role in it. I think we needed that to establish, hey, these guys like each other. That's why they're going to talk about Laurel and Hardy for like two pages.
Right.
You know,
right.
And that's why they're going like, to get in a fight, because I thought you needed a fight, buddy. And he goes, I did need a fight, man. Or like, I put the cat in the toilet for you, man. Thanks. I love you too, dude.
Just really weird sort of, but I like, he does a really good job of exploring relationships through tumultuous events.
Yeah. And I love the dad. I love the dad thing too, where he just meets some guy randomly in an airport. Cause that's something that could happen. You know, you don't know anything of your past. And then you're at an airport where those weird things always happen.
Yeah.
And you're waiting for a flight.
Right. But I will tell you, this reading it again gave me a different appreciation for it to kind of see where it's at. And so I automatically downloaded three. It'll be on my chip away. Look, if I can be on the fourth book of Dune again on another Dune reread, I can give Preacher some of my time to just see where it goes. So Travis,
what are we reading next, decided, Josh?
Have we decided what our next reading is?
Are we doing Local Man? Wasn't that it?
I think we wanted to switch it up and do something new, didn't we? We wanted to go something old, something new, something borrowed, something blue.
Yes.
So we can, I think next up we're going to do Local Man Volume 2. That'll be the next summer reheat. So folks, if you haven't read it yet, go check it out. Volume 1, we talked about on the show. It was a ton of fun. And again, it feels, I mean, it's throwbacky, right? This is an actual throwback because it is from the 90s, but Local Man is this sort of celebration of Image 90s milieu, if you will.
Yeah.
So You can find the show at comicexposure.com. Thanks for listening in. Write us, rate it, write about it, rate us, review it, whatever it is, leave a comment, all that good stuff on your favorite podcast app or whatever it is. And Travis, thank you for reheating this with me, bud.
Until the end of the world, Josh. Until the end of the world.
Till the end of the world, Travis. All right, folks. We'll see you next trade.